Right, there is so much within this Everson report. By the way, to be fair to Eileen, she headed the report. It was a panel who drew up these recommendations. It is for the political parties in Northern Ireland to decide whether they're going to accept the recommendations or not, which is why we're trying to bring you some talking points within the report so that you, the public, can, through this programme, make sure that the politicians know exactly how you are thinking. We've raised some of the issues. Another issue, of course, and we talked there about the DUP and how the new leader of the DUP is going to respond to that issue around conflict-related injury. Another issue is for Sinn Féin, because don't forget the well-publicised guarantees that Sinn Féin made. It was about a year ago, wasn't it, that not one past or present claimant would, current or future claimant would be disadvantaged because of welfare reform in Northern Ireland. They said they would not allow it, they would not accept it. In fact, let's remind ourselves what Gerry Adams said. It was a year ago, January a year ago. Here's what he said.
We're very, very clear. No one will have any benefit reduced which is under the authority of the Assembly here or of the Executive. And that was our key point on this issue.
So they were very, very clear, Eamon McCann, a year ago. Is it going to present Sinn Féin with political problems that now, if they accept this recommendation from Eileen Everson, that their electorate, some of them will only be protected for 1 year, and then the rest of their lives, they will be hit with benefit cuts? And by the way, during that 1 year of protection, it's not even full protection, Eamon. Eamon? It's not there.
Hello, can you hear me?
Oh, I can hear you.
Oh, so, yes, it falls an awful long way short of what we just heard Mr. Adams saying, because Sinn Féin, foolishly perhaps, I mean, couldn't have been more explicit at the time in meeting criticisms that they were not standing firm against the Tory welfare cuts. They said, we will ensure, as you've just heard, that not a single person sort of is going to lose out on these benefits. And that's simply untrue. And what is more, sort of, I think that we can't just blame Sinn Féin for this. The fact is that this is going to be worse, sort of, than I think, than has been said. Because if you look at the Department of Social Development figures themselves, when they test sort of the new assessment criteria, which are going to be brought in and replacing DLA, they found that a full quarter of people would receive no award at all under the new system, and almost a third would see their award a decrease. In other words, and this may be of some cheer to our friend on the other line, sort of about half of all DLA recipients under these proposals would see their award cut in some way. We're dealing with an awful lot of people who were given to understand that they wouldn't be affected at all, who are now going to discover, maybe not this year or next year, sort of, but over the 4 year period before 2020, they are going to discover that they're an awful lot worse off than they had been told that they were going to be. Somebody's going to have to answer for that.
There were big problems. There were big promises made by Sinn Féin. We've heard Gerry Adams, what he said in January. Probably apt that we also hear what Conor Murphy, another prominent member of Sinn Féin, the pledge that he made on welfare reform on this show. It was December 2014.
What we have done is ensured that those who suffer as a consequence of the changes being brought in terms of welfare will then be picked up by a system that we develop ourselves to ensure that no one loses out.
So can you guarantee that for those people currently on a benefit system which will change, none of them will be worse off, and no new entrant into the benefit system will be worse off than they would have been last week?
We have agreed a whole range of changes and a range of measures that the executive parties, through our own resources, will pick up. And that is certainly the intention that we, those who would, and there are a number of people who would lose out, there are a number of people who would be better off in terms of some of the changes that have been put forward, but there are a number who would lose out, and that we ensure that those people don't, in fact, lose out, that they are maintained at what level they have.
Well, they're not ensuring it beyond a year, and even within that year, some people are losing out anyway. The case of the defence for Sinn Féin, let's get real. They battled and they battled and they fought and they stood up, some people would argue, to the Tory government as much as any other party, if not more. And they fought and they fought, and then they were presented with a decision. Do you keep on paying these fines, as they were so called, back to the UK government? In other words, real money being taken out of Northern Ireland? Or do you find, do you attempt to find a political compromise with your political opponents on behalf of everyone in Northern Ireland? And the case for the defence for Sinn Féin is that they fought as much as they could and they've got the best possible deal, and indeed that they have helped to secure the most beneficial deal in the whole of the UK for benefit claimants. So that's for you to decide. 0 30 30 80 55 55. I see the TV leader Jim Allister is commenting this morning on the preferential treatment, as he calls it. In fact, I'll not read some of the statement. We'll see if we can get him on. And if we can't, we'll read some of the statement. But Mr. Allister very much responding to the preferential treatment that's going to be given for conflict-related injuries in Northern Ireland. Let's see if we can get him. Here's John in West Belfast. Morning, John.
Hello, Stephen. Welcome back.
Thank you, John. Go ahead.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Yeah. Stephen, I just wonder what this... I don't understand what it's about. She cut me out of it, and from what I've seen... And what I've heard and through the troubles, I'm a different person from a cousin of mine who lives in England. Now, even through the troubles, we had tragedies in the troubles. And from that, I have suffered from mental health. And I've been in and out of the hospital different occasions, and I'm just getting over another illness, sir. But what does it mean to me? Am I a special person? I know I'm different from cousins of mine abroad. Because they have no way in the world, and here we have.
Right, well, that's the question is Northern Ireland a special place? Some of the disabilities and the issues that people have because of Northern Ireland, should it be special treatment given to them? 0 30 30 80 55 55. The leader of the TUV, Jim Allister, joining us this morning. Morning to you, Mr. Allister.
Good morning.
Good morning. Your reaction to what we've brought to the fore today, that part of this report recommends that there would be preferential treatment given for claimants in Northern Ireland. This is relating to PIP for those people who have conflict-related injuries, and it doesn't define or distinguish between conflict-related injuries of people from different backgrounds.
Yes, well, what it means is that the terrorist who, by his own hand, injures himself, leaves himself disabled, not only does he continue to get his benefits, but he's prioritised to make sure that in preference to somebody injured in a road traffic accident, he gets the extra points to make sure that he gets his benefits. I think that should be scandalous, but of course it fits with the pattern of how the terrorists have been prioritised in this province under this arrangement, and this is perpetuating it further. I think for many, many people who are genuinely disabled and who struggle to get the points on their PIP, they will be outraged that someone of that oak, who by their own hand injured themselves, is going to be gifted the points to make sure they get the benefit.
Well, it doesn't.
The innocent person suffers.
It doesn't say within this paragraph that we've brought to you today, it doesn't mention terrorists, it refers to people who have a conflict-related injury. And their disability, Jim, no matter how it came about, is as genuine a disability as any other.
Yes, but it does refer to the terrorist who injures himself, because the perverse definition under our legislation pertaining to conflict-related incidents includes equally the victim-maker with the victim. The person who bombs and injures himself is equally regarded as a victim as the person who they actually bombed. So it does include, the minister was right to point out that it includes those who, by their own hand, made themselves victims in the sense that they injured themselves. They are victim makers, but they are treated in the perverse situation which prevails here as if they were innocent victims when they are not. And now they're going to be gifted extra points to guarantee their benefits. But the person injured in a road traffic accident or knocked down or something else, they struggle to justify every single point that they're awarded. No gift to them, no free points new leg up halfway to securing their benefits by giving them 4 out of the 8 points they need.
So that I'm clear, and by the way, Eileen Everson nowhere in this paragraph in this report refers to either a victim or indeed terrorists or any language like that. Well, I'll read the sentence actually. It says there is concern that this method of assessment may not fully capture the consequences for claimants in Northern Ireland of conflict-related injury. So she's leaving it open for the politicians to decide. But conflict-related injury, you know, as we read it, as plain as that, you know, obviously someone who has been convicted of a criminal offence associated with paramilitarism could have a conflict-related injury, and this panel has not said that they should not be awarded those extra 4 points. But so that I'm clear, if we park the issue of paramilitaries, Jim, do you not think that people with conflict-related injuries who have not broken the law in any way, shape or form, in other words, have sustained that disability lawfully while undertaking their duty, do you not think they should be given special treatment this is an interesting point, ahead of someone who, maybe to use your example, has been in a road traffic accident? Do you think it should be a level playing field, or there should be preference for people involved in conflict in Northern Ireland, conflict-related injury? Which is it?
I'm not disputing the issue of the innocent victim who goes out to their work in the morning at 3, no fault of their own, gets into their car and their legs are blown off. I'm not disputing the circumstance of that person.
No, I know you're not.
I'm disputing the circumstance of the person who plants the bomb and it goes off prematurely.
And that's going to be a huge debate. Hold on. That's going to be a huge debate in Northern Ireland, which no doubt will be the subject of much political discussion over the next few days. But I'm asking you a different question now. So let me set the question to you. For those people who have a conflict-related injury, who you would support, in other words, who you would say have been undertaking their lawful duty, maybe a police officer, to use an example to you, okay? Do you think they should be given an advantage over someone, a civilian who's been in an ordinary, and it's an unfortunate phrase, but a non-conflict related accident and have sustained a similar disability?
It is an invidious position to try and compare the various classes of innocence. But that isn't what we're doing here. We're comparing innocence with the guilty and saying that the guilty are to be treated as if they were innocent and fated as much as the innocent.
No,
that's absolutely wrong.
I know that, but that's a different. That's an argument that we've that's a discussion that we've done, and we will come back to you in a second or two. I'm asking you a different question. I'm asking you: should people who have conflict-related injuries, who you would support, should they be given an advantage in the assessment system over people with disability with non-conflict-related injuries?
I think it's very difficult to start picking out various people for advantage. I think that's difficult. But if anyone deserves to be picked out, it obviously is the innocent victims of the troubles. But I think it's an invidious position to put anyone in. But the reality is this. If you go back to the definition of a conflict-related incident in the 2006 order, then quite patently includes the victim maker as well as the victim. Now, the challenge now to the government, but sadly the DUP and Sinn Féin have agreed to accept this report and ask no questions. The challenge now...
Well, sorry, I don't... No, they haven't. Sorry, don't just churn that out. Where are you getting that from?
Read the Fresh Start document. They have agreed to accept whatever Eileen Everson came up with, but they will have to bring in regulations under the social...
I need to see clarification right now about that from both Sinn Féin and the DUP. I doubt that they would accept on blanket terms a whole report. If I'm wrong, I'm wrong, Jim. But surely they would want to read the report before they decide whether to accept it or not.
I think if you go back to the so-called Fresh Start, they committed to accepting whatever Ali Amazon came up with. But the challenge now is...
I won't check that.
You check that. There's going to have to be regulations made through social development, putting the flesh in all these bones. And it's at that time that I certainly will make the effort to exclude from this special treatment those who self-inflicted their injuries. And it will be interesting to see if I get any support from that. But certainly if there's an opportunity to do that, I'll be seeking to do it if and when those regulations come before the Social Development Committee, on which I sit, and I'll certainly be making a stand on that issue.
I see a statement here. I don't know whether it supports what you're saying or not, Jim. I see a statement here from the Minister for Social Development, Maurice Morrow, who this morning has said, Professor Everson's working group have produced a comprehensive package of measures which they consider to be the best way for the executive to mitigate the most harmful impacts of the forthcoming changes to the welfare system. I have now been asked by the First Minister and Deputy First Minister to take forward the implementation of the recommendations, and my officials have commenced work to ensure this happens over the next number of months.
So, no question of challenging, no question of themselves evaluating.
And also he's saying in that statement, my officials have commenced work to ensure this happens, to make sure this happens, the implementation of the recommendations, to make sure this happens over the next couple of months.
Well, I think it takes you back to my point. I think you'll find the Fresh Start document explicitly commits them to do exactly that. No questions asked.
Okay, well, there's one way to sort this. We will now contact this morning the DUP and we will ask them, unequivocally ask them, are they supporting a preferential treatment for claimants of Northern Ireland of conflict-related injury, which would include paramilitaries, which would include people convicted of terrorist-related crimes. Is the DUP supporting that? That's the question we'll ask now, and then we will bring you clarification, hopefully before the end of the programme. Jim Allister,
thank you
very much indeed. Kevin and Ballinahinch, big, big talking point this. Go ahead, Kevin.
Hi, Stephen. It was basically just, I was actually appalled at that guy, Jeffrey, one of your panel there, saying about people in Derry. My concern would be is stereotyping people and stereotyping communities. It's very difficult for people who are living with various injuries and stuff. The other thing that I would have just raised in regards to, you see in the web, government websites every year, the amount of money that actually is not claimed from people who would actually be entitled to it. Would Jeffrey be still encouraging people to actually go out there and get them type of benefits?
And so what are you saying? What is your question?
Well, basically what I'm saying is that people have to go through a system where if they're entitled to DLA or benefits or whatever, they're entitled to them. Whether or not people agree to it or not, if people are passed that they are entitled to DLA, they're entitled to it. And it's not for us to be...
But hold on a minute. There's no one. The discussion that we're having this morning is not about people being entitled or not entitled to it. The discussion we're having is whether people with a conflict-related injury should be given preferential treatment. So indeed, just think about this. Actually, you know, 54 minutes, maybe I've got jet lag, 54 minutes into this programme, I've worked out how to say this simply. Take two people in Northern Ireland with exactly the same disability, right? They have exactly the same disability. They have exactly the same level of care needed. They have exactly the same level of pain, hypothetically, okay?
Yeah.
As this recommendation stands, if someone has a conflict-related injury, they will automatically be ahead of the queue as someone else in Northern Ireland who has the same disability but didn't have a conflict-related injury. Take that one step further. If someone decided, do you know what? I'm a member of the IRA, the UDA, the UVF, whoever they are. And they went out and they sustained an injury, which some people would argue they brought upon themselves. And they are now disabled. They are going to have a preferential treatment, a preferential assessment, despite the fact that they have a disability exactly the same as someone who sat and decided during the Troubles, we refuse to take up violence, we refuse to get involved in paramilitarism. The non-combatant, the non-paramilitary member is now behind the paramilitary as this recommendation stands.
But definitely saying that in regards to your question there, Stephen, is no, they shouldn't be. They shouldn't be ahead of anybody. If people are entitled to it, they're entitled to it. If they're not entitled to it, they're not entitled to it. Nobody should be ahead of anybody else who's got the same type of
thing. As I read the Minister for Social Development statement this morning, Maurice Morrow, MLA, from the DUP, he is going to ensure that his officials commence work on the implementation of these recommendations. So it reads to me like the DUP are going to push this through.
Well, as I said to you at the start of this here, one of the ones was about stereotyping people. The other thing is that I agree that in regards to nobody should be ahead of anybody else. If somebody's got a disability, they should be treated the same. There shouldn't be any different.
Listen, thank you, John in Belfast. Morning, John.
Hi, Stephen. See, I guess I'd agree with that lad said before you either, just to an eye. But what my problem lies with is, why is it every time we speak about benefits of some sort, people on DLA seem to bear the brunt of it? You know, as Ian McCann said, if you just walk off the street and ask for DLA and you get it, you have to be assessed by doctors, by surgeons, by psychiatrists, and you don't get it all the time. They may assess you and say, no, you're not able for it this time, and you may have it tried two or three times before you get it. Now, to get DLA, Stephen, you don't get DLA for the ailment you have. You get it for how you cope with it. You could have one leg and not get DLA because you're quite able to cope with the way you have it. But to speak of now, to go on with the subject, which I think my statements or my commentary are a bit late in the programme, but to go back to a situation, should someone who was in the paramilitary get DLA in front of someone who wasn't, the answer to that question is no. But
well,
it should not stop them.
I want to be fair to the authors of this report. I want to be fair to the politicians who decide whether they're going to support this or not. So I'm going to read the paragraph that we're discussing in full. PIP has two components, the daily living component and the mobility component. In the assessment process, claimants will be awarded points depending on what they can and cannot do. The magic number for both components is 8 points. There is concern that this method of assessment may not fully capture the consequences for claimants in Northern Ireland of conflict-related injury. Therefore, where such claimants are judged to have no entitlement to PIP, we recommend that those scoring at least 4 points in the reassessment should be awarded an extra 4 points. They should then qualify for supplementary payments at the standard rate of whichever PIP component is most advantageous to them. The payments should be for a period of 1 year. Now, let's actually drill down to that even more. Look at that. First of all, let's drill down and ask some questions around what I've just read. Everson says there is concern that this method of assessment may not fully capture the consequences for claimants in Northern Ireland of conflict-related injury. Question one, what was the concern? What was the basis of the concern? Who raised the concern? Then it goes on, where such claimants are judged to have no entitlement to PIP. So in other words, that's interesting in itself. So in other words, when they've been through an assessment and the assessment says, sorry, you're not entitled to PIP, they get a second chance. And the second reassessment puts them 4 points ahead in their reassessment. Now again, compare that to someone with a non-conflict related injury who are turned down for PIP. If they go for a reassessment, they don't have the extra 4 points. How are they going to feel this morning? Danny and Carrickfergus. Morning, Danny. Right, he's having problems. Michael and Derry. Morning, Michael. Obviously, we're having problems on the phones this morning.
Hello.
Hello there. Go ahead.
Sorry, Stephen. Finally, after waiting for nearly an hour here, Jetty. Stephen, I've been on to you a few times. I'm a full-time carer and a businessman. I run my own business for that man, Jeremy, here was there, Jeffrey, or whatever you call him, and I'm from Derry.
Yes.
And I'm a full-time carer. I've spoken to him numerous times. I'm also a local businessman. And this notion that that you have to, so if somebody's going to get 4 extra points, I don't care what they're involved in the conflict. Everybody who's disabled should be treated the same. And that's just, you know yourself, you and I have spoken many times about this. I'm on the cold face of this. These welfare costs that I've already started anyway, Stephen.
It's a central question. It's a big, interesting question for this society this morning. The politicians may push through legislation, which means that there could be a hierarchy of disability in Northern Ireland in terms of whether people receive benefit payments or not. What a huge story. What a huge talking point.